Hello, and welcome to The Sound of Economics, Bruegel's podcast. I'm Rebecca Christie, your host. I'm here today in Brussels with our director, Jeroen Zettelmeyer, senior fellow, Jolt Darvash, and joining us from Utrecht is Esther Barendrecht, chief economist and head of Netherlands Economics and Sustainability at Rabo Research. We are going to talk about the push to get new fiscal rules for the European Union finished before next year's European elections, and in particular, how they might help or hurt efforts to fund the green transition. Jeroen, can you tell us what is on the table and how is the compromise shaping up?
So, as you may remember, the European Commission put out a legislative proposal for the reform of the European economic governance, which is mostly about the fiscal rules, back in April, and this proposal has been under negotiation since then, particularly since the Spanish presidency took over in the middle of the year. And I would say we are sort of halfway, roughly, perhaps, to this negotiation. So there has been progress. I think there's been some movement on both sides, and this movement is being recorded in a series of so-called landing zone papers that have been drafted by the Spaniards as a basis for discussion. And the last one was on November 8th for the ECOFIN meeting on the next day. And so what these papers do is they address some of the more obvious weaknesses of the Commission's proposal, which Jolt and I have been writing about in a September Bruegel policy brief with our colleague Lennart Welzlau. And so this has to do with both the possible need to further develop the debt sustainability methodology of the European Commission that the whole system is predicated on and make it more transparent, which is something that we had called for. So this is will be part of the future agenda. So the proposal is to do this while the implementation is ongoing so as to not to hold up the process. But for the most part, the debate is about something called safeguards, which is this idea that was pushed mainly by Germany and some of the more fiscally conservative member states, which is to add some quantitative simple rules to a framework that is otherwise mostly supposed to be country-specific and guided by this debt sustainability analysis. And the reason why they're doing that is because the fiscally conservative member states are worried that there would be too much discretion and potential politicization if the whole framework was only guided by a methodology that is primarily controlled by the European Commission. The problem, of course, is that the idea of having country specificity is the beauty of the proposal. So this is the fundamental reason why we hope that compliance will be better in the new framework than in the old one, because countries know that recommendations of the Commission and that the adjustment implications of the proposal are going to be based on a review of their country circumstances. They're not going to be sort of mechanical rules that are the result of a political negotiation. And now the question is, to what extent does one need to add such mechanical rules to get the whole thing through?
Jolt, how do the numbers look on this? How many European countries really are in trouble with their debt? And what we see in sort of how people interact with each other in the marketplace, does that line up with what the rules have been telling us or what the new rules will tell us?
There is a very large variety of fiscal positions across the European Union. I mean, some countries like Bulgaria and Luxembourg have public debts even below 30% of GDP, one half than the 60% of GDP benchmark. Others like Greece or Italy, also Portugal, have relatively high, well over 100% of debt. There are some countries in the middle, I would say Spain and France and Belgium, which are close to 100, which is from an economic perspective might not be an overly high level, but certainly much higher than the 60% of GDP benchmark included in the EU treaties. And nobody foresee any change in the treaty-based benchmark of 3% deficit and 60% public debt. So the question is at what pace countries should converge to that. And basically the new framework offers a hope or a promise that it will be done in a much more economic way namely via debt sustainability analysis, which will provide country-specific adjustment speeds, rather than previous framework, which was sometimes very ad hoc and very rigid.
So is the idea that countries would have a longer official time to cut their debt that they might actually do, because in the past they were supposed to shrink it overnight and that just was never going to happen?
So in the new framework, there is no numerical value by when the target has to be reached. But the requirement is that even in adverse conditions, like, for example, a reduction in the economic growth rate or an increase in the interest rate, even under such cases, the debt ratio should be plausibly declining towards a 60% value. In contrast, in the current framework, which is still suspended till the end of this year, there was a numerical rule which was called 1/20th debt reduction rule, which meant that to the extent that the debt was over 60%, basically 1/20th of that had to be reduced in each year, whatever happens. Now, that was a very, I would say, I don't want to use an adjective, it was a very still unfavorable or undesirable rule, because irrespective of economic circumstances, it required a concrete numerical reduction in the public debt. And they have to say that this was not even respected. Italy and Belgium violated that rule many, many years during the previous decade. But there was always an excuse was fine why this was not a problem. So these countries will not put an excessive deficit. And it completely undermined the credibility of that rule. Now we have the hope that in the new system, which is based on debt sustainability analysis, countries would much more understand how it works, understand that indeed this is a realistic base that they will have to follow. So I think the chance for compliance will be also higher.
Esther, you're at Rabobank. Why is plausibly declining debt so important?
For many reasons, I would say. From a perspective from the financial sector, financial sector can only function well in a financially stable environment. And financially stable environment also requires that government debt is sustainable. So that has to do a lot with, in the end, with the market functioning well. I think the other thing is, of course, have financial institutions have clients and clients simply invest in government bonds. So that's a much more specific and concrete kind of perspective on this discussion. And then we have a question on the table around how the framework for budget rules also allows for green investments. And of course, the financial sector is looking with great interest also at the need for an energy transition and the investment that it requires and would like to play a role in it. So having a framework that allows our economy to transition and for financial institutions to play their role in that would be of importance to them.
Do you think the compromise that's taking shape will help growth and therefore create the money and the momentum necessary to make these investments? Or do you think there's a danger of sort of growth limiting practices like the ones we had under the debt rule of yore?
Yes. So it looks like the compromise that's taking shape will allow for a little bit more room, but I'm not sure that it will be enough.
Yerman, how does the balance between exceptions and rigidity work out in practice? We have seen, as these negotiations go on, calls from the Italians and others to make certain types of investment exempt from the rules. We've seen questions about defense spending. We've seen questions about it's not enough to have debt sustainability. You really have to put a percentage target on it, otherwise no one will believe you. These are somewhat at odds with each other. How is the landing zone going to happen?
So there are two problems with the current approach, which is to try to reduce the discretion under this country-by-country debt sustainability analysis-based system through simple numerical benchmarks that are added on top. The first problem is that these numerical benchmarks might require fiscal adjustment that is even tougher, even more ambitious than the DSA does. And they might do that because, for example, one of these numerical benchmarks may require debt to fall by a minimum speed after the end of the adjustment period, regardless of what the DSA says, or they might require a debt to be lower than at the beginning of the adjustment period, even in countries that start from high deficits and so have great trouble doing that, while at the same time, in principle, having enough time to work themselves towards a sustainable fiscal position, if allowed more time. So this is the difficulty, that by having these safeguards, we essentially reintroduce the problem that we are trying to get away from, which is to come up with mechanical rules that produce unrealistic adjustment expectations. The second problem with the safeguards is that they could undo one important aspect of the new framework, which we have not talked about, which is to create incentives for public investment and particularly for green investment. The framework does this by offering countries an extension of the adjustment period. So the period of time that they have to get their fiscal house in order, so to speak, from 4 to 7 years. They don't necessarily give you a break on the overall adjustment effort. So that will depend a little bit on the growth implications of reforms and investment that is proposed. But they do lower simply by extending the period of time that you have to fix your fiscal house. They lower the annual effort that is required. And this can be a very strong incentive. So politically, austerity can be a killer. And so you can get away with much less austerity if you put away a convincing reform and investment plan, and then you get 7 years to do the whole thing. So the reforms, the investment, and the fiscal adjustment. The problem, however, is that the so-called debt safeguard, which requires debt at the end of the 7 years to be lower than at the beginning, may put a cap on the extent that you can debt finance your investment in the middle. And if that is the case, then you are in effect creating a barrier to just the phenomenon that you're trying to encourage, which is for countries to come up with convincing investment plans. So in work that Jolt and I are doing, and in a little blog, a first glance that I published yesterday on Bruegel, we point out that problem and we express the worry that because of this, the current variant of the compromise that is seems to be forming may not be green enough. So it may actually prevent useful public investment more broadly, but specifically green investment, even if this investment is just of the kind that the rules are trying to encourage. So if it is EU endorsed, meets RRF criteria for green investment, and even if countries could well repay the debt that is accumulated to finance that investment, because at the end of the 7 years, they are on a sustainable track.
Yes, and let's talk for a minute about debt sustainability and what that means. To a layperson, that just means they can make payments on existing debt and borrow new debt at affordable rates. Is that what these rules are aiming to get at? And is that what's making people uncomfortable? The idea that those two principles alone could determine whether a country's fiscal position is sustainable?
So the definition of debt sustainability for practical purpose is that the debt to GDP ratio does not explode. So if that continue going up and up and up, then eventually countries cannot repay because the debt would become larger than the economic capacity of a country. In practice, the way this is operationalized is that in an environment of uncertainty, you want a debt path that is projected to come down as a share of GDP, because if you don't want debt exploding, but there are bad shocks, then the only way to make sure that that's the case is for debt to actually decline, right? And so there, the extent to which debt is required to recline then depends on the uncertainty that a country is faced, the interest rates that are projected, and the growth rate that is projected, and of course, the level of the debt. And because these are complicated country-specific factors, the answer is a little bit different depending on which country we are talking about. That is the essence of the new methodology. But on top of that, the methodology requires these conditions. For example, debt has to fall regardless over this first 7 years. And so in order to have such safeguards, but still prevent them from unduly restricting policy, including policy that is very much welcomed by the new framework and that the new framework is supposed to encourage, like higher investment. One needs to introduce exceptions to those safeguards that protect particularly types of spending. And that's a step that has not been done yet. So, you know, I'm not terribly concerned with these safeguards. I think some of these safeguards should probably be abolished. And the concern that leads to these safeguards should be addressed in other ways, like having a more transparent methodology. But if you're going to introduce the safeguards, then you have to make them relatively complex in a way that, for example, exempts EU-endorsed investment, particularly green investment, because otherwise you're going to have unintended consequences.
When we come back, we'll talk about ways to make things better. Welcome back to The Sound of Economics. Esther, can you talk to us about ways the new rules could do more to encourage the green transition and promote green investment while also meeting some of these debt sustainability goals?
Well, I think maybe I should then first introduce what would be my preferred solution, and which is in fact a little bit outside of these rules. To be honest, my preferred solution would be that if we agree that certain investments have EU-wide or at least cross-border benefits, that we would also allow for European sources of finance for that. We basically have a green fund, which could be financed by Eurobonds, so that is debt guaranteed by all the member states together. And I think that would be a solution that has a benefit because it takes away the burden on the budget of the individual member states. So you would take away the burden on the debt sustainability trajectory of the individual member state. And it would have other advantages, for instance, the fact that we would have a real safe European asset, which would help the capital market to function. So I think economically, that would be the preferred solution. I also see that politically, it's not so easy to have it introduced. And that is also, I think, why Jeremy has written down possibilities for tweaking the rules in such a way that they would allow for a little bit more space.
We at Bruegel have certainly worked on questions like safe assets, joint European debt, and whether the NGEU, Next Generation EU joint borrowing program should be made permanent. Interested listeners should definitely go to the Bruegel website and read about that. Esther, how can countries keep their debt sustainable according to these European rules and also make the investments necessary to bring up growth? Because growth is part of this. If your debt stays the same, but your growth falls, your numbers look worse.
Agreed. So the best thing they can do is to have a good balance between expenditures and their income, and then have investments that actually add to growth. But I think a key problem or challenge that we're facing here is that in the green transition that our economies have to make, not every investment that you do, our economy greener, also by definition means higher growth. So green investments, depending on what they exactly look like, could interfere with that sustainability purpose. And that is, I think, a key challenge. Now, there are also other ways of doing this, right? So one thing to think about is what share of this green transition should be publicly financed and what share could be privately financed. If you have a larger private finance part, you have to take on less fiscal burden on the government side. And for instance, ways of doing that are by making sure that you actually give a proper price to greenhouse gas emissions, which would make it more attractive for businesses to invest in such solutions. But also, for instance, I think if governments are able to provide clear vision for where the economy should be going and provide a regulatory framework that works, it's easier for the private sector to take on that transition and take a larger share of the investment burden, so to say. So those are the kind of things that you can think of in a little bit wider economic view, so to say.
I really appreciate your connecting this debate with the broader economy and the broader challenges of getting the public and private sector to work together. Zsolt, you and Jeremy have made some proposals for how things could be better. Can you tell us about those?
One option is to allow a temporary investment push. We have to clarify immediately that it would not be any kind of investment, because a major reservation about exempting something from fiscal rules, is that countries would try to classify everything into that. For example, if you would exempt green investment, then countries would try to classify everything into green. But very specifically, the European Council should decide and endorse what kind of green investment push a country would be allowed to do. Let's say for a limited period. I mean, it can be maybe 7 years as the adjustment period, but in principle, it can be also somewhat longer. And during this period, we could separate, let's say, the additional green component and the non-green component. And the non-green component should continue to fully comply with the adjustment requirement. It means that, let's say, if a country has a large budget deficit now, then in 7 years from now, it has to reach at least a primary balance and overall balance which is consistent with that sustainability. But at the same time, during this period, it should be allowed to do, again, a temporary additional investment in the fight against climate change. Now, how this can be done? I mean, certainly one necessary condition is that the safeguards needs to be adjusted in a way to allow this. For example, there is one safeguard that we really like, which is called no backloading condition. And it aims to prevent that countries will push all the fiscal adjustment to later years. So let's say government has 3 more years. It says, okay, the next government will do all the fiscal adjustment. We do nothing. So that's clearly unacceptable. So this requires that basically fiscal adjustment should be more or less at the same pace in each year during the adjustment period. But if this is applied in such a way, then it wouldn't allow a temporary increase in green investment. So for example, green investment should be exempted from this no backloading condition. Again, let me emphasize, the non-green component will continue to be adjusted. Fiscal adjustment will happen. Another is related to this debt safeguard. Again, if you require the public debt to decline from the beginning to the end of the adjustment period, then many countries would not be able to do a meaningful green investment push because that would increase the debt level. So this safeguard, again, should be formalized in a way which exclude the additional green component from the public debt. But let me emphasize again, when the adjustment period ends, the green investment initiative also ends. And at that point, the fiscal position, primary balance, will be at such a level which will ensure a rapid debt reduction. And this is what matters. But at the same time, with this, I would say little changes, but politically perhaps not so easy to agree on. But with these changes, we will be able to foster at least a temporary green investment push, which is really needed. I mean, Europe must reach its green emission reduction targets, because if Europe fails to reach its emission targets, then, you know, the rest of the world would say, oh, even the rich Europeans don't reach their green targets. Why should we bother? So I think it's absolutely essential that European countries reach their targets and fiscal rules can block this achievement.
Yeremin, what would you like to add to that?
I want to stress that what Jolt and I are advocating is not the classic so-called golden rule for investment, where it is assumed that fiscal prudence and rules constraining fiscal deficits should only apply to current spending, so to the portion of spending that does not go into investment. The theory behind this approach is that investment leads to growth and hence pays for itself. Now, that's actually not true in general. But it is specifically not true for lots of green investments. So we need green investment to save our planet. But this does not mean that green investment will necessarily generate the user fees, the revenues, the growth that pays for itself. What we are trying to do is to identify settings where it is okay for green investment to raise the debt ratio. In a setting where debt ratios are generally being perceived as being too high and where they will be forced down by the fiscal rules that are coming. And so the central argument is that it is fiscally responsible to raise the debt in order to finance investment, provided that this is unambiguously good investment, and so we are trying to ensure this by applying EU-level criteria to it, but provided also that this is accompanied by underlying fiscal adjustment in other areas, so revenue measures, non-investment-related spending cuts, such that at the end of this very critical investment period that we need to get to our 55% emissions reductions targets by 2030, the fiscal health of countries is such that they can also then safely repay that investment. So it is essentially a compromise between privileging investment, but not forgetting that it still needs to be repaid. So we are trying to come up with an idea, a green fiscal rule, if you like, that would reconcile the dual objectives of debt sustainability and environmental sustainability.
So on Jeremy's proposal, I think the question we would need to discuss is that, of course, I think this could work for a temporary investment push that is definitely needed to reach climate targets for 2030. At the same time, we also know that after the climate targets for 2030, we'll have climate targets until 2050. And we also know that in the meantime, there is a big challenge for Europe to adapt its economy to climate change that is happening, which also requires a different type of investments. And being a Dutch person, it's a live image that I have because we have the dikes to protect our country and we know we will need higher dikes. So my question to Jeremy would be, how does this work if you take into account a longer time frame of prolonged additional investments to help mitigate climate change and help adapt to climate change?
So all investment will need to fit under the broad umbrella of what countries can repay. What we are trying to do with this proposal is to make sure that countries that have high debt levels now and that would be forced into very sharp debt reductions by the fiscal rules that are on the table, and in particular by the so-called safeguards that are trying to establish minimum speeds of debt reduction, are not prevented from doing significant climate and other investment beyond what is needed to ensure debt sustainability. And so we propose that provided they are making efforts to improve their fiscal positions such that they achieve sustainabilities, temporary increases in debt are tolerated under those rules. For a country like the Netherlands, this is not an issue because the Netherlands has enough fiscal space. It has less than 60%. It would not be subject to these safeguards in any case. So that is the objective. Of course, it is true that there will have to be investment efforts beyond 2030, beyond that big initial push. And, you know, indeed, that will have to be reconciled with sustainability. That is a fundamental feature of the current rules that we do not try to change.
When we come back, we'll talk about the politics of getting this over the line. Welcome back to The Sound of Economics. Jolt, how do we get through the historic divisions in member states that have prevented these rules from either being changed in the past or being passed more quickly now?
There seems to be a momentum in various different sides of the EU for finding a new agreement. I mean, we might also recall that well before the Commission articulated its reform proposal in November last year, there was, for example, a Dutch-Spanish non-paper on reforming fiscal rules. Two countries which often have very different positions on macroeconomic matters, but they were somehow able to reconcile their differences and come up with a joint paper. Now, at this stage, you know, it's still hard to predict whether, and if so, when a political agreement can be reached on the new framework. But it seems from various interviews that all sides, both the fiscally hawkish countries and also countries which have higher public debt and wish to change the current rules, have a common desire to reach an agreement. So in this sense, I do see a probability that a political agreement could be reached in the coming weeks or months. Now, that will not be the end of the story, because after that, all the legislations have to be absolute precisely from sentence to sentence, from word to word, clarified and agreed and worked out, which itself will take several months. But there is some likelihood, some probability that it could be done within the current mandate of the Commission and the European Parliament.
Certainly the finance ministers are hoping to get a general approach by the end of the year.
But since this legislative process will take time, and you know, in principle, the system would start spring each year. So whether it can start with a full force already next year, I think that's more questionable. So it could be that somehow the next year, 2024, might need to be a kind of transition year, and the whole system can be fully operational a year later. Again, this would be a better solution than, you know, going back to the previous rules.
I believe the Commission has put out guidance telling countries to use sort of a lighter version of the current rules as we transition into the new ones to help that go smoothly. Yeremin, who are the most important voices to come together as we get this deal? Certainly, you need French support, you need German support, you need some of the more conservative. I mean, the Dutch, for all that they want the green change isn't to be funded, they also very much want debt to come down. And then you have the Italians with some of the biggest and most liquid public debt stocks in Europe. They want to be able to keep running their market so it keeps working. How do we get it all together?
So it depends on what you mean by the deal. So we have been talking about two different things on this podcast. One is the attempt to reform European fiscal rules and to get to a better result than the current system. I think the likelihood of that happening is relatively high. There has been some convergence, as reflected in these various papers under the Spanish presidency. But the other thing that we are talking about is the issue of whether we will have enough fiscal space and fiscal action to undertake critical public investment for climate by 2030, right? That's the main thing for the purposes of this podcast that interests me. And so here we have essentially two avenues to do this. The one that was put on the table by Esther in the earlier segment, which is to do a joint European financing effort and simply take this outside of what countries have to do individually, to do a common funding of this. And this is also my preferred approach, but it was explicitly taken off the table by the European Commission when they came up with their new fiscal governance proposal. They could have defined fiscal governance in a way that was broader than just the fiscal rules and the multilateral imbalance procedure, which is also part of this, but not so important. But they chose not to do it because they wanted to pick their battles. They thought it would be politically a no-go. And so the current plan, certainly by the end of this commission's mandate, is to try and incentivize public investment, and particularly green public investment, in the context of this new fiscal framework. Given that the alternative of doing this through public funding is not on the table, I think that member states, particularly those member states that are less keen on joint funding, have a pretty big incentive in making this happen meaningfully through the design of the rules. And so I do believe that we will find some compromise on that along the lines of, at the very least, exempting green public investment from the safeguards. Now, on who is on which side, the main issue here will be to make Germany comfortable with the fact that the safeguards should not stifle the basic direction of this reform, which is to allow more country specificity, and the fact that the safeguards will need to exempt some types of spending. Otherwise, you are really in contravention of both of the main objectives of the reform, one being to increase compliance and national ownership, and the other one being to incentivize investment. And as far as I can see, you know, countries like the Dutch are probably aware that these trade-offs exist and are going to push in the right direction, as is the Spanish presidency.
As we close this podcast, Esther, do you have any predictions or final thoughts on where we need to go from here?
Well, maybe as a final thought, it's clear that it's not easy to reach compromise here. But I would also say that, you know, Europe has some other challenges that it also has to deal with. And it must also think on how many topics it wants to remain internally divided. So I would think that, you know, closing this one off would also free up some political space to work together on the economic challenges like the energy transition and our strategic autonomy and some more political issues like the safety of Europe. So I do hope also from that perspective that we'll indeed reach a compromise that can be operationalized soon.
Zsolt?
If we wouldn't reach or there wouldn't be a compromise, then we would go back to the fiscal rules which are currently suspended. And that would require a very abrupt adjustment from many countries, which could likely derail, economic growth. We already see some slowdown due to higher energy prices, uncertainties, monetary tightening, and we don't really need that an abrupt fiscal adjustment would make the economic situation much worse. So I very much hope that an agreement can be reached, at least on the main part of the proposal. But of course, with Jeremy, we're hopeful that some green part can be also inserted into it.
Thanks to all of you for joining us on this episode of The Sound of Economics. You can find a recording of this and all the other episodes on our website, Bruegel.org, as well as the many publications and events that we've referenced in today's conversation. Thanks again. See you next time.